Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania.
East on of democracy.
I love your valleys and hills. I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Again we present Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. An historical dramatization of the part our great state of Pennsylvania plays in the life and success of these 48 United States. This program is another in a series prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to better acquaint you with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home, sweet home to me, Pennsylvania, my home.
Rifles in the Wilderness. War whoops, rifle shots, screams. These sounds are not of your life, are they? As you work in our modern communities, or as you sleep in the deep stillness of the night, they do not come to chill your blood or moisten your hands with fear. But other Americans have heard them. They have echoed in the valleys of the Juniata and Susquehanna, rolled down the Tuscarora Mountain, resounded against the hills of Pittsburgh, Franklin, Sunbury, and Easton. They were part of the price paid for your comfort and security. Sounds that were symbols of a long and bloody conflict fought in Pennsylvania for the possession of the North American continent. Here, 200 years ago, the French and their Indian allies fought the English and Americans. It's a story worth remembering.
My brothers, French great chief, Coulon de Villiers, come with gift wampum. Hear his words.
30 moons ago, my brothers, the English came into these lands, led by the tall white devil, Washington, and killed my brother and many of his men who were sent to resist them. The English have assault my children. My heart is sick. But tomorrow I shall send my French soldiers to take revenge. And now, men of the Saint-Saul-Louis, men of the Lake of Two Mountains, Huron, Abenaki, Iroquois, La Présentation, Nipissing, Algonquin, and Ottawa, I invite you all by this belt of wampum to join your French father and help him to crush the English. Take up this hatchet, and with it, 2 barrels of wine for a feast.
Did you come by any news, Father?
News? Aye, the worst.
What is it, Father? Tell me. I must know.
The French and Indians have defeated this young Washington, the Virginian, at Great Meadows. They captured a stockade he'd built there, called Fort Necessity. Oh, they let him go with his men, but there'll be scant protection for English settlers like ourselves from now on. If those savages turn loose, we'll...
I'd better bar the door.
This was Pennsylvania in 1754, a Pennsylvania facing the storm of a war for a continent, a Pennsylvania facing the bitter truth that the war was not going well because of lack of unity, lack of awareness to the danger, a Pennsylvania hemmed in on the west by a line of French forts, ending with Fort Duquesne at the junction of the Allegheny and Monongahela Rivers. Lack of unity in 1754, did you say? Yes, there was that. Listen.
What if the French are building forts on the Ohio? What's that to us in New York, eh?
Well, being a Massachusetts man, can't say be the French is much love. But Pennsylvania and Virginia ought to be able to fight their own battles.
We've civilized the coast here in New Jersey. Let them civilize their own country. Nobody helped us.
And did I say that the war was not going so well in 1754? Yes, that's true, too. There was red tape and incompetent leadership in London, for example. Now, take the Duke of Newcastle.
Your Lordship, I think it would be wise to consider fortifying Annapolis.
Annapolis? Annapolis? Oh, yes. Annapolis must be defended, to be sure. Yes, yes, certainly. Annapolis should be defended. Where is Annapolis?
Yes, there was a comic side to it, in spite of the gloom. And English and Americans, then as now, had not lost the ability to laugh. But there were other men whose clear vision and courage told yet another side of the story. Men like Benjamin Franklin, who talked to General Braddock, sent from England to wipe out the French threat from the West.
Confusion and delay! Confusion and delay! Upon my soul, Mr. Franklin, what are the inhabitants of this foul country thinking of? No wagons, no horses. How the devil am I going to move against the French? Not any means of carrying my supplies, what?
If wagons and horses will be of service to you, General Braddock, I think I can secure 100 of my outfits in Pennsylvania and send them on here to you in Virginia.
You can't pawn my soul, Mr. Franklin. I'll be everlastingly indebted to you, everlastingly. You're practically the first colonial I've seen here to have shown any sense. With a few exceptions, of course, two exceptions. Such as that's the young Washington, my aide-de-camp, you know.
Yes, General Braddock. I had the privilege to overhear your argument with him last night at mess. On the best method of fighting in the wilderness, was it not?
Overconfident young puppy. Thinks he knows more about campaigning than trained European veterans. Well, he's a good man nonetheless. Experience with us will soon knock his backwards theories out of him. Imagine. He has the tenacity, the audacity, to claim that fighting as the savages would, behind trees and fallen logs, is superior to volleying from close ranks. Sheer ignorance, Mr. Franklin, sheer ignorance. But we'll teach him. We'll teach him.
Perhaps, General.
And with the confusion at last ironed out, General Braddock's lesson began. Through the green, silent forest wound his shining, colorful column, aimed against Fort Duquesne. Music and banners, strange sights in the wilderness, heralded the approach of the light cavalry, the red-coated regulars, the detachment of seamen, the rolling cannon, the blue-clad Virginians, all on the way to the first test of the military methods of the old world against the new. They fought at the Monongahela to avoid rough land, re-fought it at some 7 miles below Fort Duquesne, and pushed on. And then there happened what very few thought would be possible. The French and Indians, instead of staying in the fort to defend it, came out into the woods to meet them.
Colonel Washington! Colonel Washington!
Yes, sir!
Get those lieutenants of yours to the front of the line! Give them a few bodies and bend the bayonets! We'll chase them to the cane and path of England. Don't question my orders, you innocent whelp! Be off!
Yes, sir!
And at the front, Washington found things much as he expected they would be. The British regulars, trying to form a continental battle line in the face of the concealed fire of the French and the savages, were herded together like cattle, and were falling like slaughtered cattle under the bullets of their enemies.
Virginians there! Take cover and advance on that hill on our right! That's where most of the fire is coming from!
Some of us charted, sir, but these regulars here are firing in our direction. We were trapped before and behind, sir.
You regulars! Hold fire until you can see what you're shooting at! Here, take cover behind these trees.
Get out from behind those trees. Form the line, boss. You form the line.
General, they can't form a line from under this fire. They'll be massacred.
Out in my way. Lieutenant, stop those defenders. Stop the villains. They're running like sheep. They go.
General, you're wounded. Throw them.
Why go on? Let the curtain of death cover the brave Braddock and his mistakes. 4 horses were killed beneath him that day. 2 were killed under Washington. And the young colonel's uniform was shredded in 4 places by bullets. Poor Braddock, it is reported, spoke only twice during the dismal headlong retreat. Once he said,
"Who was it, Fawcett?"
And then, just before he died,
"We shall better know now how to deal with them. Another time."
And the disaster went further than Braddock's defeat and death. Dunbar, Braddock's successor, would pay no attention to the governor of Virginia when the governor suggested that he gather the troops together for a new attack. Instead, he threw away supplies and equipment, beat a retreat to Philadelphia, and left the frontier open, left the territory in possession of the French. What did this mean? It meant this.
Braddock's gone too, son. Better not venture out too far in the woods these days. Got that gun in order?
Aye, Father, but we'd run if they came, wouldn't we? We wouldn't stand here and try to fight them, would we?
Son, you might as well learn now that there can be times when you don't have the chance to run.
My Indian brothers, the English have been driven from our lands. The Ohio now belongs to our father, the great white king of France. I order you, my brothers, if any of the English subjects show resistance to our rule, crush them. It is now our turn to be the conquerors.
And with Braddock's defeat, the running whispers of the armchair strategists of the day gain momentum.
Stop the war.
Sign a peace now before it's too late to do anything.
We'll never win.
The savages are all on their side.
Why waste more money and men?
I say let's get out of it.
But costly experiments sometimes prove of value. So it was with Braddock's failure. His lesson provided, as his last words prophesied, a better way to deal with the French another time. That other time came. William Pitt was made Prime Minister of Great Britain, supplied the needs of the war with a strong, sure hand. Brigadier General John Forbes led a new expedition against Duquesne and adapted his troops to the wilderness way of fighting, as Washington had advised Braddock. And while the task was long and laborious, 3 years later, in 1758, Fort Duquesne fell, undramatically but permanently. The French abandoned it, left it in smoking ruins, ruins which Washington entered finally in November with the advance guard.
Well, here it is, Bouquet. Years, money, men, trouble, all these went into our price for it. But we took it finally, a long step toward victory.
Yes, and it will bear a name that means victory in the long run.
Do you know the name? What is it, Bouquet?
The general is going to name it after the Prime Minister, the man who, mark my words, will see to it that we win the victory you speak of. Now on, Fort Duquesne will be called Fort Pitt.
Thus in blood and in victory was born
Pittsburgh, the gateway to America's West.
Pittsburgh, which was to forge the sinews which span the continent.
Pittsburgh, the giant of industry, the iron hand which today hammers titanic blows for the safety of the freedom which began its life. The mighty furnace of the nation, the flaming pride of Pennsylvania. Keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, you're the land that I adore. I love your families and hills, I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
You have just heard another program in the series Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy, presented by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense. Do your part to aid the defense of our country. You can join the armed services. Take your place in civilian defense. Buy defense bonds and stamps. Work for victory at home, in the field, in the mine, or in the factory. Do your part. And tune in again next week to hear another thrilling chapter of Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.